Beruchim, Anim Saim, ladies, we are studying today Parashat Ki Tetze. There are many mitzvot in our Parashah. I think if you count them, you'll find that there's 74 mitzvot in our Parashah. That's a nice quantity. There's 613 mitzvot. So to have 74 in one parashah, that's a nice percentage. Let's discuss one of the mitzvot. For example, the Torah tells us we have a mitzvah of Shiluah HaKan. You've heard of this mitzvah. Ki yikare kan sipor lefanecha, you're going to see a bird's nest. Baderech, on the road, bechol etz, so you might see it on a tree. Ala ares, so you might see it on the ground. And you're going to see a mother bird, and the mother bird is sitting on the chicks. Or you're going to see the mother bird sitting on the eggs. Lo tikach ha'em ala banim. You're not allowed to take the mother bird. Shaleach teshalach ha'em. Send the mother bird away. And take the children or take the eggs for yourself. And if you do this, this will give you long life. Now, this is a precious mitzvah. There's only two mitzvot in the Torah where we're guaranteed long life. One is a very difficult mitzvah. That's the mitzvah of honoring parents. This is relatively an easy mitzvah where you stumbled across it. You were walking on the McDonald Avenue and you looked on top of the train tracks and you saw that there's a bird's nest hiding out in the corner. So you got excited, happened to be in your trunk, you had a broom, so you stop to the side, so you go, you get a ladder maybe also, and you climb up, and you just shoo the mother away. It's very easy to do that. You just have to shake the broom a little. The mother gets scared. It's a bird. The bird flies away. You take the eggs. Maybe you want to put on gloves because you don't want to touch them. It's okay also. And you take the eggs or the chicks. You bring them home. You have the scrambled eggs or whatever you want to do with them. You want to frame them. Whatever you want to do with the eggs is not important. You have now fulfilled a mitzvah from the Torah. I don't know exactly what the logic of this mitzvah is. So simple. I mean, you have to say it's just one of those mitzvot where God says, do it, and trust me, it's a good thing, and you're going to get reward. Because at first glance, what are you doing? You're shooing a bird. The poor mother. The mother comes back to the nest, and she sees that her children were kidnapped. Now you have a hostage. Her children are taken into hostage. Well, why would the Torah say to do such thing? And not only that, but you're going to get long life for doing this. And as I said, it's a precious mitzvah. Not too many people have the zichut to fulfill it. But then it says, if you do this mitzvah, you'll have a zichut to do another mitzvah. Well, what's the next mitzvah? Ki tivne bayit hadash. You're going to build a new home. And the rabbis tell us, what's the connection of building a new home next to the mitzvah of the birds? So the rabbis tell us, if you fulfill this mitzvah, your reward is going to be, you'll have a zechut to build a new home. So anybody that needs a house, anybody's looking to build a new home, look for the birds. Shoo the birds away, but there you go, now you'll build a house. And then it says, well, we're not finished. When you're going to build your house, we have a law. Jewish homes have to be safe. Safe on the inside, safe on the outside. You're not allowed to build a home where you have a porch that doesn't have a gate. Because God forbid, if people walk up to the porch and they're not careful, they could fall off. Or certainly a roof. A roof, I'm not talking about a pitched roof, I'm talking about a flat roof where people can access it. You have to make sure that on the roof you build a ma'akeh. Ma'akeh is like a fence. Why? Because God forbid somebody's going to go up to the roof and they're going to be walking, and if there's no railing, they could fall off the roof. And therefore, it's a dangerous house. So there's a mitzvah. Just like there's a mitzvah to put a mezuzah on the door, there's a mitzvah to build a railing on a porch, and there's a mitzvah to build a railing around your roof, if it's a flat roof that people access it. And for that matter, the Torah is telling us it's a mitzvah to have a safe house. You're not allowed to have a table that has a pointy edge to it, that every time somebody sits down, they cut themselves. So you're not allowed to have a pit bull in your living room. So every time a guest comes over, the dog mauls the guest, God forbid. The Torah is telling Varminan. The Torah is telling us that the homes have to be safe. Good. Comes the Torah and continues. Lo tachrosh beshor ubahamor yahdav. You're not allowed, when you're in your field, you're not allowed to plow with an ox and a donkey. Ladies, in the olden days, they didn't have tractors. Today, this law really doesn't apply too much because we have tractors. We have machinery to plow the fields. We don't know too much about plowing because most of us are not in the farming industry. But in the olden days, where it was an agrarian society, where everybody was involved in agriculture, everybody was involved in agriculture. So the Torah comes and tells us, when you plow your fields, do not plow it with an ox and a donkey. You cannot attach them, and you have to plow behind them. I don't know why yet you can't do this, but the Torah says you can't do it. But our rabbis tell us that if you do the birds, you'll merit to have a house. And not only are you going to have a house, you're going to merit to have a field, because you're plowing your field. So you see, one mitzvah brings another mitzvah. And now the Torah comes along and says right after that, Gididim ta'asirach al arbak anfot kesutecha shetechaseba. That what? If you have a garment, and it's a four-cornered garment, you have a mitzvah to put seseet on the garment. Four corners, like the men wear seseet. In the olden days, they didn't have this garment. Maybe they did. The garment that the boys wear, the seseet that we put over our heads, the small one the kids wear in the yeshiva, and the men wear under their garment. In the olden days, it was different in the sense their actual garments had four corners, which means a suit jacket that a person would wear had a split down the middle, there was four corners, and they used to put seseet on the garment itself. That's really the law. So the Torah comes and says, if you do the mitzvah of the birds, that's one mitzvah. That's going to lead you to another mitzvah of what? You're going to build a house, now you'll have a zichut to build a fence on your porch. It's a mitzvah. And then you're going to get a field. You can fulfill the mitzvah of not putting a donkey and a ox together. And God's going to reward you with good clothes. What's a good house and a good field? But if a person doesn't have nice clothes, it's not complete. God's going to give you nice clothes also. But what? So you can fulfill a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah you're going to fulfill? You'll be able to put tzitzis. So from here, our rabbis learned a very important rule. A rule that you've heard, it's in the Mishnah Pirkei Avot. Mitzvah goreret mitzvah. Which means, one mitzvah leads to another mitzvah. Meaning, mitzvot are actually contagious. You think that you're going to do one mitzvah. It's like, Lehavdil, if I can give you an example that you might be able to understand, it's impossible for most people to eat one potato chip. You can't. Even if you say you're going to eat one potato chip, you say, oh, well, I'm just going to have is one. And then after you have the one, you say, I'm going to have one more. One more is also okay. One, two is okay. It's not a lot also. But I'm not having more than you're allowed to have the whole bag. But I'm talking about the nature of people where they only want to eat one, and then they decide to have two, and before you know it, they ate the whole bag. And then they said to themselves, what happened to me over here? That's an example I'm telling you. Mitzvot are not potato chips. I know that, ladies. What I'm trying to tell you is that when a person does one good deed, you have to know that that opens the path where there's another good deed right behind it. And once you do that good deed, the door opens up and there's a deed behind that. So you never only do one. It always leads to more good things. I'm sorry to tell you that the opposite is also true. Avera goreret avera. It's never where a person just signs up for one sin. Because behind that sin lurks another sin. And therefore, averot are also contagious. I mean, you can't just do one. Unfortunately, and I'm going to explain to you how it works, that behind the first sin is another sin, and there's another sin. Another person commits a whole bundle of sins, and he says to himself, but I only wanted to do one sin. And only so he finds himself with a whole bag of averot. So I'm going to explain it to you over here how it works. A simple interpretation, then we'll go a little deeper. Our rabbis tell us that every time a person fulfills a mitzvah, he creates a malach. You create an angel. You have to believe that. This is not something that's a fairy tale or science fiction or something out of a fantasy book. There's an actual reality that mitzvot create angels. And I know what you're thinking. I don't see them. Where are they if they're created? Well, we know already, ladies, not everything that you can't see means that it's not there. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not a reality. If you went to Kennedy Airport, you'd see a plane take off on the runway. You saw the plane. It's there. After 30 seconds, the plane is in the clouds. You can't see it anymore. Does that mean it's not there? Of course not. You can't see it, but it's there. Similarly, every time you do a mitzvah, there's angels being created. Whether you can see it or not, it happens to me, there are some people that can see it. There's angels in this room, for example. There's an angel right over there. You can't see it. I can see it. No, I'm just joking. I can't see it. But the point is, there are people that can see malachim. There's no question about it. There was a great rabbi that lived about 500 years ago. Less than 500 years ago. His name was Rav Hida. Rabbeinu Chaim Yosef David Azulai. He was from the great Sephardi rabbis. He saw angels. Not only did he see angels, his shamosh saw angels. One morning the Hida was learning with his study partner. So his shamosh, his attendant, came in to give the rabbi coffee. So he brought 4 cups of coffee. So the Hida said, there's only 2 people, why are you bringing 4 cups of coffee? He said, what about the other 2 guys? He said, no, those are angels, they don't drink. That means the attendant of the Hida, he saw malachim. We wouldn't see such a thing. They saw it. There were great rabbis that also, the Arizal, for example, who was a great mekubal, he used to attend the shi'ur of Rabbi Moshe al-Sheikh. There was a great rabbi that lived, this generation that we're talking about now was about 450 years ago in the holy city of Sfat. And that period, there were so many great rabbis that mastered all the different levels of Torah. From the Torah, from the Chumash, from the Halachot, to the Talmud, to the Zohar, and they all lived in the same neighborhood. I don't know if you ever had a neighborhood like that that had so much saturation of great scholars. On one block, you had the Arizal, his student Rav Chaim Vital, and all his other students as well. Then you had the author of the Lecha Dodi, Rav Shlomo Elkabetz, that was in that neighborhood as well. You had Rabbi Moshe Cordovero, the Tomer Devorah. You had Rabbi Moshe Al-Sheikh, who was also one of the greatest Darshanim of his time. And you had Rabbi Yosef Karo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, that also lived in this time. The city of Sfat, still today, 500 years later, when you go to visit Sfat, even though these rabbis are not alive anymore, you still feel the Kiddushah. Which means they left such an impression on that city that just walking through that holy city, you have no choice to feel that Kiddushah of 500 years ago that's still in the bricks, it's still in the topsoil, it's still in the earth, it's something unbelievable. So there was a custom in Sfat. There was a great rabbi called Rabbi Moshe Al-Sheikh. He wrote a pirush on the Torah, the pirush of the Al-Sheikh. And he used to give a class once a week, whatever it was, and all the rabbis would attend it as well. And his derashot was so sweet. Even the great Kabbalist Arizal would attend it. And he loved it. They used to say that Arizal would laugh during the class because it was so sweet and so enjoyable. And he loved the derashot of the Al-Sheikh. One time, in the middle of the shi'ur, I'll give you two stories. The Al-Sheikh was giving a story. It says in the Torah that Lavan tricked Yaakov 100 times. When he came to paying him, he worked for 20 years. Now he has to pay him. So 100 times he tricked him. So the Al-Sheikh explained the different tricks that Lavan did. Now this is, you have to be a master because it doesn't say it in the Torah. But with his wisdom he figured it out. And the Arizal was laughing, he was enjoying it. And then he came along and he told the rabbi after, you're 100% right what you said. Because after the shiur, Lavan came to me.
Lavan, Lavan, the guy who you're talking about, who lived 1,000 years before he came to me, he said, the rabbi's 100% right, it's exactly what I did. He confirmed the story. And this great rabbi was able to, Lavan came to him to tell him it was emet. So one time, the al-sheikh was giving a shi'ur, and in the middle of the class, the Arizal got up and walked out. Wow, the al-sheikh was offended. What does it mean, in the middle of a class, you just walk out like that? Maybe something I said. So he went to the rabbi, he said, Rabbi, why did you walk out like that? He says, to be honest with you, the shi'ur was delicious. It was unbelievable. But at one point in the class, you got a little excited under the Divrei Torah, and a drop, a smidget of arrogance went into your heart. You became a little haughty. Not a bad haughtiness, but from the Divrei Torah you were excited. Once that haughtiness came into you, all the angels that came to listen to your class left. So when I saw the angels leave, I left with them. What does it mean? That means he saw the angels. I mean, if the Arizal would walk in now, he would see the angels. That's what Hakamim say in the Gemara. Not regarding angels, but similar. So sometimes a person, the Gemara says, a person's in a room, and he feels that it's crowded. Or he feels it's stuffy. The Gemara says, Minahave, it's from them. Which means there's other things in the room as well. Whatever that means to in its depth, but there's a concept, there's other things that are evident, maybe not to our eyes. Oh, so what are we saying? Every time a person commits a mitzvah, fulfills a mitzvah, you created a malach. That malach is your creation. It's an unbelievable concept, and it stays with you. And it becomes your advocate. It becomes your defense lawyer. Like the Mishnah says, kol ha-mekayem mitzvah ahad, koneh lo peraklit ahad. Peraklit is an advocate. It's like a lawyer that defends you. And now the angel is very thankful. You created it. You gave it existence. So it wants to pay you back. How, what is it going to pay you back? Is it going to give you jelly beans? What is it going to give you? Cotton candy? How is the angel going to pay you back? So the rabbis tell us, the best payment they can give us is an opportunity to do another mitzvah. A chance to do another good deed. So the angel now is like our helper, and it presents to us another mitzvah. Now what happened? You do another mitzvah. Now you have two angels. Now they present you a third mitzvah, and so on and so forth. So therefore, you have to know, like I told you, you never end up with one. The opposite is also true. I want you to know the Gemara says, when the men come home on Friday night from synagogue, it says two angels escort them home. One to the right and one to the left. You believe that? That means when your husbands or when your children are coming home on Friday night and you open the door for them, Shabbat Shalom, there's Malachim coming in with them. I say Malachim. And we don't take this lightly. What do we say the first thing when we come home? Shalom Aleichem. Malachi HaSharet. Look at this. It's a reality. What do you mean Shalom Aleichem? Who's coming there? The angels. Boachim LeShalom Malachi HaSharet. Come on in, please. Join us. But the angels are there. They don't come that often to the Friday night table. They come. So we say, Barichuni LeShalom. Bless us. Bless us. Yeah, all the Malachim. And then after they ask the blessing, we don't want to keep them there. They have to listen to all the Lashon Hara at the table. But B'sitchem LeShalom, we tell them. Better that you go. Because sometimes on the table, we don't say nice things because whatever, we can't control ourselves. So we say, B'sitchem LeShalom. Better you go because we don't want to embarrass you. But the great Tzaddikim, they don't say B'sitchem LeShalom. They wait till the end of the meal. Then they say B'sitchem. They want to enjoy them. In any event, I'm just showing you it's a reality. God forbid somebody commits a sin, there's also an angel that's created. But this is a prosecuting angel. This is an angel that doesn't defend. It prosecutes. And it punishes. Which means the sin itself is the punishment. Tiyasircha ra'atcha, the Nabi says. The sin itself punishes. How does it punish? It presents another sin in front of you. And now it's like a spiral. Now all of a sudden another sin. Now you have two. And then another sin is presented. So you have to break it. You have to stop the cycle. So that's why the Torah tells us, you did one mitzvah, you shoot the mother bird. Oh, what a great mitzvah. You know what? You know what your reward's going to be? We're going to give you now a chance to do another mitzvah. Now listen to what I'm going to tell you now. You're going to build a house. And you're going to build a house, but that's not the reward, the building of the house. What's the reward? The mitzvah. That's right. To put the fence. Listen to what I'm telling you now, ladies. I'm telling you something very deep. You think when you built the house, that the house was the reward. Look, God loves me. He does love you. Maybe build a beautiful mansion. And I have such a wonderful edifice that I was able to put up. But the reward is that he gave you the house. Why? In order that you're able to do the mitzvah. You don't make a beracha when you build a house. But when you build the ma'akeh, when you put the fence over the gate, over the porch, there's a beracha. Asher kiddeshanu b'mesvota v'sivanu la'asot ma'akeh. It's a mitzvah, like hanging up a mezuzah. Why am I telling you this? The whole reason why you got the house is to build the ma'akeh. And let's say a person built the house and you didn't build the ma'akeh. Then already God says, Chas v'shalom, take the house back. Which means whenever God gives you the house, it's in order to do mitzvot in the house. And therefore, if you don't do the mitzvah, so then Chas v'shalom, the house now was not justified. I gave it to you as a reward. This mitzvah led to that mitzvah. Now listen to what the Targum says. I'm going to read you Targum, it's astounding. The Targum, the Aramaic interpretation over here. He says like this, and I quote, "Aret bnei betahata, you're going to build a new house. V'ta'aved tiyaka le'igrach." Interesting. You're going to build a tiyak. Tiyak is a teak. Teak is like a, teak is a pocket. Le'agrach, for your reward. You're going to build a pocket for your reward. What is he talking about? You're going to build a pocket for your reward? What the Targum is telling us in depth is like this. If you want to preserve the house, just like a teak, a pocketbook, it preserves the money. Without a pocketbook, the money goes all over the place. Now you have a house, you want to preserve the house, so you need to protect the house. How do you protect the house? What's the pocketbook that protects the house? The fence, the ma'akeh, which is the mitzvah, it could be the mezuzah. It could be having Torah classes in the house. It could be inviting guests into the house. There's many ways to protect us. But God gives us the asset, not for the asset. Not just to have it, so you can add it to your portfolio. So you can have now more money. So you can have now kavod or glory. The purpose why God gives us anything is in order that we can use it to fulfill a mitzvah. Good. Now watch. I'm going to tell you the depth now. So therefore, this mitzvah leads to that mitzvah. Oh, now you put the fence up. God says, you know what? You're doing great. Now you have a lot of angels. I'm going to give you another mitzvah. All of a sudden, somebody's going to be selling a garden, a field, and you're going to buy the field from him. Oh, now you have a chance to plow. Oh, beautiful. Now I can do a third mitzvah. And then what's going to happen? You're going to have a lot of money in your pocket. And somebody's going to come along and say, the department store over here is selling beautiful new clothes. You say, you know what? I have a lot of extra money. I can buy a new wardrobe this year. And you're going to go buy a new suit, and it's going to have four corners. God says, oh, you can do another mitzvah. You can put this in seat. So look at this. The guy, he intended to do one mitzvah. How many did he end up with? Four or five. Why? Mitzvah, goreret, mitzvah. One mitzvah leads to another mitzvah. But now I tell you, and this is a very important rule I'm telling you now, because in religion, when we're trying to bring people back to the Torah and the Mitzvot, I'm giving you secrets now. When we want to bring somebody back, what do we tell them? If we would tell them, do all the 613 Mitzvot, whoa, that's daunting, that's too scary. 613 Mitzvot, very heavy. How could you tell somebody who's not doing anything, and then all of a sudden you drop, this is a very heavy book, you drop the book on their head? And now you tell them, this is it. You got to fulfill this, all these 613 mitzvot. And if you don't, you're going to go to Gehinnom. Whoa. The person says, I can't. This is too much. So what do we tell them? We tell them, do one mitzvah. What do you mean, one? One? But how can the rabbi say do one? The Torah says do 613. We tell the person, just do one and everybody's happy. What that person doesn't know, that you can't just eat one. And what's going to end up happening? From that one mitzvah, do another one, let's lead to another one. Before you know it, he's doing all the 613 mitzvot. Without him being nervous. Which means, you don't have to tell the person to do everything. Just accept upon yourself one mitzvah. Once you accept upon yourself one, you started the process, you started the snowball. Now the snowball just keeps on getting bigger and bigger and bigger. All of a sudden, before you know it, you have an avalanche. And you say to yourself, Just think in your own religious careers, lady. Now, Baruch Hashem, everybody over there is Nashim Tzadkaniot, all righteous, all fulfilling mitzvot all day long, 24 hours a day. But before you were doing mitzvot 24 hours a day, when you were doing mitzvot, Pash, think how your Torah mitzvot career began. If a person was not religious, somebody's not religious, what do they say? They're regular. That's regular, regular. I mean, if you ask somebody, are they religious? No, they're normal. They're normal. They're normal. Religious people are crazy people. What's their level? No, no, regular, regular, regular. The religious people, they fell off a mountain. They have they're irregular people over there. This is the way we refer to them. But everybody else who's normal, normal, normal. Okay, whatever it is. In any event, when you were normal, let's say, how did it start? It didn't start that one day you decided, I'm doing everything. They didn't know it starts like that. I'm doing everything, that's it. I'm going to go crazy now. All the mitzvot, I'm locking myself in a room. Teilim, Ezet, all the whatever it is. It started, you went to maybe a class, you heard something. This one said, I'm going to take challah. This one said, I'm going to go to 15 minutes to read Teilim for a sick person. It all started with one mitzvah. And you had no idea where that mitzvah was going to lead you to. You had no idea. You just said, maybe it was a Bikur Olim visit. Maybe, God forbid, somebody visited Bet Avil. Maybe it was some sort of chesed that you did. You hosted a bake sale. You never know what the mitzvah is, but there's so many options just to get into the game. Once already you started that mitzvah, you're in. All of a sudden you say, you know what, that led me to go. I only signed up to learn for 15 minutes tehillim, to read with the ladies. But then they said, you know what, we have another group, and then we have another mitzvah, and we have tzedakah, and then and all of a sudden, before you knew it, you were full swing into the game, which is a berakah, but it all because you did one. And that's why the first mitzvah is always the most important mitzvah. The first mitzvah of the day is very important. Because once you start the day with a mitzvah, that's the whole momentum of the day begins on the right way. If a person starts the day with avirah, very high. You have to break the trend. You have to cut it. Otherwise, it's gonna continue. Good. We continue now. So I'm telling you that God gives the house to do the mitzvah. Good. But now I say something else. Listen to the way I'm going to say it now. When it comes to the mitzvah of the birds, what's the logic of this mitzvah? So listen to what Rabbeinu Bahya says. Rabbeinu Bahya says something that is a big chidush. This you have to put on your seatbelts. I don't want to scare you. But listen to what he says happens. You're going to go and shoo the mother bird away. You're going to take the eggs. You're going to go home. You're going to make a party. The mother bird, he says, this is from Zohar, is going to come back to the nest. It's going to see that the children are not there. And it's going to become depressed. It's going to become so miserable here. Her family was taken away. That she's going to become suicidal. And she's going to want to kill herself. You could imagine. A mother, Hasbe Shalom, comes home and the family's not there anymore. She has no reason to live. She has no purpose. And therefore she's going to want to finish. So the Beru Bahia writes that every animal, every creation has an angel in heaven that supervises over that species. So the angel that supervises over the bird is going to go to God and say, Borei Olam, look, the bird, Azata, she's in trouble. She wants to commit suicide. She's depressed. Have mercy on her. God is going to look down and see the mother bird in her tzad, in her pain, in her agony. And God, it says in the Pasuk, V'rahamav al kol ma'asav. God has compassion on all His creation. And God is going to have mercy on the mother bird, and He's going to pacify her. And He's going to calm her. But once He's going to have mercy on the mother bird, He's going to have mercy really on the whole world. That activates God's mercy to the entire world. Because once God already is in the merciful mood, now already it's going to come down to the people as well. So He says, that's why you get such a big reward. You brought mercy down to the world, so you get long life because of it. And therefore it's a tremendous concept, which is when the guy's going up on the tree shaking the bird away, what is he really supposed to be thinking? This is to activate God's mercy. To be honest with you, if I can be clearer, the real reason why you do it is because God said. That's really what you're supposed to be thinking. Because we don't really know the reasons for any of these mitzvot. You're doing it because it's a chuk. Because God said. But now that you know this reason, the rabbi's telling it to us, this is also something to think about. Oh, so what's going to happen now? Listen to what happens. So you were involved in a mitzvah that evokes mercy. Yes? It's going to lead you to another mitzvah. You see, mitzvot are like tests. In second grade, you took a test, a spelling test. After you passed second grade, you went to third grade, you took another test. And then you went into sixth grade, and then you went into college. You're always taking tests, but you were only able to take your tests in high school because you passed your tests in elementary school. You see, every mitzvah that you do is like a test. You can't right away go and take an SAT in college or to go into college if you didn't pass your grade school tests. Every time a person does a mitzvah, so he elevates himself. Now you did this mitzvah, you're ready now for the next mitzvah that comes behind it, which is a little more challenging. It's like a person that lifts weights. In the beginning, they can't lift anything. So they train themselves 5 pounds, 5 pounds, 5 pounds. After already you lift 5 pounds, now already 10 pounds becomes doable. But before you lifted the 5 pound, you weren't able to even touch a 10 pound weight. It was too heavy for you. Now you lift 10 pounds, 10 pounds, 10 pounds. Now a 20 pound is doable. You see, you're training yourself to elevate. Mitzvot elevate the person to the next level. So watch this. When a person builds a house, why is he putting a parapet? Why is he putting a marquee around his house? Because he has compassion for people. He says, you know what? People are going to come to my house. I don't want them to be in danger. I don't want them to be hurt. I don't want them, chas v'shalom, to fall and hurt themselves. So a person that puts a marquee, really it's a form of compassion. So you see what happened there? He started with this easy mitzvah. It's easy. He took the broomstick, the birds. And what was intention? I want to bring God's compassion into the world. Now he has a little harder mitzvah. Now already he has to bang a fence. A little more difficult. But you're ready. You pass the first mitzvah. It'll lead you now to do the mitzvah on a little more higher level. And then what's the next mitzvah he's going to do? What's the reason why you're not allowed to put a donkey and an ox together? Anybody know the reason why? So there's a few reasons. I'm going to give you one reason that the rabbi said. Oh, that's one reason the rabbis bring down. Absolutely. One of the animals works harder than the other. And therefore they're not compatible. It's not fair to put a strong animal and a weaker animal next to each other because the other one's going to always have to catch up. So it's not fair, you have to put compatible. Put two donkeys together, put two oxen together. But don't put two different strengths together. This is a very good reason. But I'm going to tell you another reason. We're worried about the poor donkey. We talked about the donkey last week also. Yeah. But now we're saying something else. What happens? An ox, he eats. The ox eats straw. I don't know what he eats. He eats ox food. After he finishes eating, 2 hours later, what happens? The food comes up. That's called chewing its cud. You ever have an animal that chews its cud? What does it mean, chews its cud? He chews it. It goes down into his stomach. A couple of hours later, it comes back. We're not used to this because we're human beings. We don't chew our cud. We used to have a rabbi in Magen David in sixth grade. He was one of the great rabbis. He didn't like us chewing gum in class. So every time we would chew gum, he would say, well, ma'alegera, you're chewing your cud? You chew like an animal chewing its cud. That's why you see animals always chewing. For example, you always see a cow chewing. Why? Because the food always comes back up into their mouth. They chew it a second time. An ox is like that. A donkey does not do that. A donkey, once it eats, it's finished. It doesn't come up again. What's going to happen now? The donkey and the ox are working together. When they're working, they're not eating. They're working. The ox ate 3 hours ago. All of a sudden, the donkey turns around. He sees the ox is chewing. So the ox, the donkey says, what is this over here? He gets to eat, and I don't get to eat? What, he brought a lunchbox, they didn't let me bring a lunchbox to work also? Go explain to a hamor that he's chewing his cud. You can't explain that to a donkey. A donkey's a donkey, he doesn't know. You can explain it to him now. But so we understand what we're talking about. He's going to understand this. Tell him, no, he ate 3 hours ago. No, 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 he's eating, he's chewing. What are you telling me he ate 3 hours ago? He's chewing right now. So the donkey is going to be all upset that what? How come he's eating and I'm not? So it's going to give him stress. So the Torah says, have mercy on the poor donkey. Don't put him together with the ox so you don't hurt its feelings. So you see what happens over here. It starts off with a guy shooing a mother bird. So the angel of the mother bird goes to the Shamayim and activates God's mercy to the whole world. That's easy mitzvah. And then it comes to building a house where you can have mercy by building a fence because you don't want people falling and hurting themselves. You have mercy on people. And then the next mitzvah is going to be not only on people, you can even have mercy on an animal. So therefore you're not going to put the donkey and the shore and the ox together. So you see all these mitzvot, they're levels. You did level one, now you get to the next level. Now you get to the next, which is you keep on getting better and better. The mitzvot are not only for God. The mitzvot refine the person. It makes us better people. It makes us more sensitive. It makes us more refined and more polished. That's why the Hachamim say, there's a story in the Gemara. The Gemara says there was a rabbi called Rabbi Abhu. Rabbi Abhu had a son. Rabbi Abhu's son excelled in the mitzvah of respecting his father. Even Rabbi Abhu said, my son, when it comes to respecting his father, exceptionally, he's unbelievable. So the Gemara tells a story. He says, one time, his son's name is Avimi. So Rabbi Abhu tells his son Avimi, do me a favor, bring me a glass of water. He's thirsty. Avimi runs. By the time he got back to his father to bring him the glass of water, he's bending over to give it to him. He notices his father fell asleep. Now, what would a normal son do? He fell asleep. He finished. You put it next to him on the table. Then go back to what you were doing. No, my father asked me for water. He's going to wake up any second, so I have to wait. So he stood there in that position as he's bowing down next to his father like this. Now, in the interim, he sees his father sleeping. He's not getting up so fast. So he started to think the Vrei Torah. He had a question his whole life on a certain chapter in Tehillim. It's not important what chapter, and it's not important the Hiddush. But it says, at that moment, when he was just standing over his father, the Gemara said it came to him. And he was so excited, he got the answer to his question that he had for his entire life. After that, his father woke up, and that is the water. Our rabbis tell us, don't think it was a coincidence. He was doing one mitzvah, so therefore what? He created an angel. He created a malach of kibud abba'im. Oh, that's a big angel. That's a powerful angel. And therefore that angel opened up his brain in order for him to understand Torah that he never realized before. Concepts that he wasn't able to figure out. But you don't think it's a coincidence. Which means, I'm explaining to you better. If he was standing at the bus stop, he wouldn't have thought of this Hiddush. It wouldn't have came to him. But because he was standing over his father, involved in a mitzvah, that already presented him the mitzvah of understanding the Vrei Torah. So his reward for Kibud Abba'im was the Vrei Torah. You see, God pays us back in the same currency. The currency of mitzvot. There was one great rabbi. He opened up a yeshiva. Oh, the yeshiva had hundreds of students. Hundreds of students. I think on the first day, there was 500 students in the yeshiva. It might have been Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. Great, great yeshiva. So at the time, all the rabbis got up at the inauguration to make speeches. What a yeshiva. You open up a 500? Normally you open up a yeshiva, you have 3 guys, 4 guys. And it grows. Here they opened it up, boom, 500 students, first day. And it was something that was so, it was marvelous. It never happened before, such a thing. So one of the rabbis got up to speak. He said, there's no question that we're witnessing over here history. This is a great zechut to open up such a yeshiva. But I have a question. And this is still remains a mystery, he says to me. He says, the rabbi that opened us up this yeshiva is involved in a great mitzvah. He says, but I want to know, which mitzvah did he do before this that led to this one? Which means this cannot be the first thing. This had to be mitzvah goreret. I want to know this is a reward for another mitzvah that he did. I want to know what he did last year, whatever it was, 10 years ago, that resulted, that opened the door to this mitzvah. Therefore, you always have to know, ladies, like I told you, you're never doing mitzvot individually. You know, a fellow says, the rabbi tells the boy, come to shul tomorrow morning. It's a mitzvah. I'm tired. Just come to synagogue. Now, you're telling the boy to do one mitzvah. What happens? On the way to synagogue, he's driving. He sees his friend walking. He's driving. He stops on the side. You need a lift? Where are you going? To synagogue. Come on with me. Look at this now. Now already he did chesed. He didn't plan on doing chesed. But he has two mitzvot already. Now he comes into the synagogue. He prays. His friend sees him. Oh, you're here? Do me a favor. Do you have such and such number, phone number? Oh, yeah, I have it in my BlackBerry. There's 362. He gives him the number. Now he did chesed. Another chesed. And then so on and so forth. So you see, and that's not a, don't think it's a coincidence. Don't think, well, because I saw the guy. No. That's your reward. Because you decided to do something good, God's going to present you with a string of mitzvot. Don't think it's by chance. Don't think it's by chance. But unfortunately, the same thing is true with averot. And therefore, it's never one. Once already a person commits an averah. God forbid, whatever the averah was. Good? Now the boy comes home, he committed a sin. So his mother comes along and says, son, where were you? You can't tell the mother where he was. So what does he do? He lies. Oh, ready the avera, led to another avera, now he lies. And that's just a simple example where one right away turned into two, and we didn't even start yet. And then of course it turns into much worse. And that's what Torah is telling you. Put yourself on the good path, and from the good path will lead to many things. And that's why I tell you, ladies, we're in the month of Elul. Do one mitzvah. Look, Hashem, I'm talking to people that do many mitzvot. But this is the way we bring people back to the Torah and the mitzvot. One mitzvah at a time. They don't realize they're all attached. They don't realize when you pull the rope of the mitzvah, oh, there's a lot of rope behind it. There's a lot of mitzvot that are attached to it over here. And by pulling one, you end up pulling the whole train. You end up getting the whole book. The whole book follows. I'll just conclude with one last concept. Oh. Our Torah tells us as follows. The Torah tells us over here in Pasuk, we have a law of the first law. Ki tetzeh lamilchama al oyevecha. You're going to go to war against your enemy. Untano Hashem Elohecha beyadecha. God is going to deliver the enemy into your hands. Jewish people in their history have fought many wars. Even in modern history have fought many wars. But I want you to know a rule about the rules of engagement in Jewish wars. The custom was, not a custom, it's a law. The soldiers would meet in a field, and there used to be a Kohen. He was the military chaplain. The military chaplain used to stand in front of the army, and he would give them a speech. You are fighting in the name of God. Victory is in God's hands. Put your faith in the Almighty. Do not be scared from the enemy. Do not tremble, do not worry. God will deliver us victory. We'd give them a pep talk. No different than a general, but a general doesn't include God. The military chaplain, who was a Kohen, I'm telling you, Kohen Gadol, the rabbi, he would give them tremendous musar, and then he would announce exemptions. Certain soldiers are exempt from fighting in the military. He would say to them, anybody that built a new house this year and did not yet inaugurate it, you're exempt, go home. Anybody that planted a new garden that did not yet eat from its fruits, you're exempt. Go home. Anybody that got engaged to a girl and did not yet get married yet, you're in the process, you're exempt. He would announce all the exemptions. And then he would say, and anybody that has a sin, anybody that committed an avon, and is scared that the sin is going to be a black cloud over him when he's fighting in the war, you better go home. So, after he makes all the exemptions, you see, you know, a lot of soldiers would leave, a lot, or a little, we don't know how many. Many years ago, the reform, and the conservative, the reform,
Jews, they make fun of this. They put on a skit in one of the playhouses that they had, and the name of the skit was the religious army, the way it looks. So they had on stage all Jewish soldiers standing in the war, and they made fun. They had the military chaplain, the Kohen, gets up there, and he starts making an announcement. Who did this? You're exempt. Who did that? And 10% go off the stage. Who did this? He's exempt. 10% goes off the stage. And by the time he finished with all the exemptions, who has sins? 90% left. At the end of the thing, what are they trying to do? They show two old men with beards and canes. Those are the only soldiers that were left. So they say, look at this. This is the Torah. What are you talking? There's a joke over here. They made fun. Nobody can make fun of the Torah like Jews can make fun of the Torah. The Goyim cannot make fun like these Jews made fun of the Torah, unfortunately. So what happened? They went to one of the big rabbis. Maybe it was the Beit HaLevi. So they were all upset. They said, Rabbi, look what these people did. They're making fun. They show at the end of the play, two old men. Those are the only two soldiers that are left. So the rabbi says, they forgot the best part. What do you mean, Rabbi? And they won. Which means with those two old rabbis, they went to war. That's the whole Torah. What do you mean? They left the best part out. What do you think? God's not going to fight? These are tzaddikim. They went to war also. But I wanted to explain to you, and I'll conclude with this. The time is late. An unbeliever how the Torah is so sensitive to the feelings of human beings. You know what the Gemara says? Well, because a guy builds a house, he's exempt from war? That doesn't make any sense. We're in danger now. We've got to go fight a war. So you just got a field, you got a garden. Well, because you didn't eat some cucumbers, you're exempt from a war? Go fight the war. What are you talking? How do you exempt people? In America, we exempt a person from a war because he just built a house? No such thing as an exemption like this. So you know what the rabbi says in the Gemara? The real exemption is if a person committed a sin. That's the real exemption. Because if a person commits a sin, he's going to die in the war because the sin is going to get him, like we learned. And then if he dies, it's going to weaken the whole spirit of the soldiers, because they see dying soldiers. So the real exemption is who has sins. And really, the chaplain should get up and say, whoever committed sins and did not make the Shabbat, go home. But you know what would happen? They would be embarrassed. Imagine if that was the only exemption. What would happen? Now you'd see a couple of people, 20, 30 people, I would say, oh, these guys, Avarianim, look at these guys. Oh, I... It would be a scandal. It would be not nice. They would be embarrassed. So what does the Torah say? The Torah made up some other exemptions. Whoever built a house, whoever got engaged. So now everybody's walking away. Now nobody knows why he's exempt. When all the people are walking away, they say to themselves, maybe he built a house. Maybe he just got engaged. Maybe he has a field. Even though he made a sin, it's to cover up. You see how sensitive the Torah is? The Torah doesn't want even the guy who made a sin. Don't embarrass him. And what does that mean, ladies? If the Torah went out of its way to protect the dignity of a sinner, what does that mean to us? Chas v'shalom, we see people committing averot. It gives us a right to embarrass them. It gives us a right to humiliate. The Torah is protecting the dignity of a sinner and exempt soldiers from war. You're putting us in danger. Protect the sinner. We don't want him to be embarrassed. And that's why the Torah says, when a person would come to the Beit HaMikdash, if he sinned, he had to bring an animal, a hatat. He has to bring an animal. And you have to stand on line. And the Torah says, on the line that you bring Korban hatat, there was also people who didn't commit sins, that would just want to bring a donation. And they stand on the same line. So the rabbis say, make two lines. Make the line for the sinners over here, to the left. And for the people that want to bring donations, stand to the right. What are you putting everybody on the same line? To protect the sinner's dignity. Because now when you're standing on line, nobody knows what you're there for. Nobody knows. If they made a special thing, a hatat section, now you see all the people standing, everybody walks into the Beit HaMikdash giving them dirty looks. They tell the guy, what did you do? He made an avira. And they're going to put it down. Now his daughter wants to get married. No. I saw this guy in the Beit HaMikdash. He was on the Hatat line. No good. Yeah. Now they're going to start talking about him in the synagogue. Now his whole life is destroyed. What does the Torah say? Everybody stands on the same line. Nobody knows what you're doing over here. Everybody's mixed in with everybody. We don't want anybody to look down at anybody. We don't want anybody to put eyes on anybody. Anybody think they're holier than the next guy? You're all equal in God's eyes. And it's a very important lesson. Protect the dignity of every single Jew, even the one that makes a avon. That respect is still mandated by our Torah. We never have an excuse, especially in our generation, to look down at another Jew, to put down another Jew, to humiliate, to embarrass, to fault him. Borei Olam is a big judge. Borei Olam is able to judge the world without us helping him. You know, so much should be zocher to all the mitzvot. Not mitzvot, mitzvah. Once you do one mitzvah, but not Hashem, you'll be zocher to do many more.